As you know, we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience in the industry. I personally use it to guarantee that I'll always have access to some of my Bitcoin in cold storage whenever I travel. If you want to check out a Bitbox O2, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE to get 5% off your purchase or go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE. All one word, no spaces. Check them out. Ah, screw it. Here we go.
The Lightning Network is still quite Western. It's not user-friendly. It's you need to allocate capital to even use it in most cases, at least in a sovereign way, right? This is going to be a very long road to get to a place where we can actually offer fulfill that dream that you just talked about.
Hey everybody, this is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps. Are we already recording? Oh, sorry.
We just started.
Okay. Hey, welcome back to High Hash Rate. This week, we've got a great guest, Matt. Am I pronouncing this right? Aalborg?
Yep, Aalborg.
Aalborg.
You got it.
And Matt is building PPQ.ai. So if you've heard our recent, episode, I guess it was probably a month or two ago, with Charles from Sats for AI, I was very excited about that product. And then I saw PPQ.ai, and I started playing with that. And I love it. So before we jump into it real quick, Matt, how's it going? Like, how you doing right now? What's going on?
What's the vibe
in your world? Around. What's the vibe?
Yeah, it's good. You guys got me up a little later than I'm accustomed
sorry
to being up, but
so sorry.
Yeah, I'm in New York. I'm surprisingly awake and I'm excited to have a good conversation. So yeah.
Matt, tell us a little bit about you. So what do you do? How did you, get to the point where you're building PPQ.ai? Are you, what is your background?
Sure. Yeah. Longtime Bitcoiner. I was into it maybe starting in 2013, late 2013. And, spoke to a lot of my interests, the technology, the libertarian lean, programmable money, all that type of stuff, seemed really cool to me. I was particularly interested in like some of the promises that Bitcoin had, banking the unbanked, spreading financial access, et cetera. So my main point of interest was like, is this stuff actually being used in developing countries? I started researching local Bitcoins in Paxful for a couple of years. These are peer-to-peer trading platforms where the majority of their customers come from emerging markets. And during those days, the advertisers on those platforms, the customers and the clients, they would actually post their phone numbers on their little advertisement. So I would text and call them, and I was talking to these people in all sorts of countries about the actual utility use cases happening with Bitcoin at that time, escaping capital controls, doing remittance, all sorts of amazing use cases. So I eventually built a website called usefultulips.org, which aggregated the data from those P2P platforms and also kind of had some articles that went along with them to kind of explain what was going on. That was like a definitely nonprofit thing that never made any money. I tried to think about different angles, but just never could think of anything. So I then moved on to Bitrefill. I'm still at Bitrefill. On a part-time basis, I was at Bitrefill maybe full-time for 2 to 3 years. Now I'm part-time, trying to build PBQ. That's my background. I think are you, my strength.
Are you a dep by trade?
Yeah. So no, I'm not. I would say probably more of a data scientist, data analyst by trade. But even that, I didn't learn that stuff until my late 20s, early 30s. I'm 38 now. So even before then, I was actually a professional Chinese linguist in the U.S. Navy.
Number two.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a few.
So crazy.
We've only had one other Navy linguist, but a lot of veterans.
But he was from also the Chinese.
Yeah, he did Chinese as well.
That's right.
You guys, Gary. What was his name?
Gary Krause.
Gary Krause. I'll look this guy up. Maybe we know some of the same people.
I don't know if he's real active on social media outside of Noster, but he is really active on Noster. Yeah. He's big into, I think right now he's trying to send Bitcoin transactions over radio.
That's very cool.
Yeah. What is your role at BitRefill?
Yeah. So work in a lot of areas, but mainly marketing. So
okay.
I try to understand like the user behavior, what countries they come from, what payment methods they use, what use cases are going on, that type of thing. I also write these like long-winded data posts about the popularity of different payment methods at BitRefill. I have another one coming out probably next week. That's good for many purposes at BitRefill. As well as like, the broader audience in crypto. So
cool. So when it comes to like AI, it really blew up with ChatGPT, 3 at the end of 2022. So it's like there's the people that were really into AI before that or like interested in AI before that. And then everybody who just started using chat prompts and ChatGPT. Were you interested in this stuff before? Like 2022 or 2023?
Definitely not.
Okay.
I'm riding the wave of like I tried it out in like mid 23, early 23, mm-hmm. and I was like, wow, this is becoming more handy by the day. I think, you know, there's a lot of strengths to being in the game before that, but I think my strength is I'm like the perfect power user of regular AI tools. So yeah.
And so when did you have the idea for pay-per-Q? Like when was it was like, oh, we could use Lightning and just do it this way. I mean, this like, because
what is pay-per-Q, by the way?
Yeah, so pay-per-Q is a, PPQ.AI, pay-per-Q, like pay-per-question, pay-per-query. The whole idea is you get access to premium AI models like OpenAI, Claude 3 Sonnet, et cetera, many other models, and you're paying on a per query basis with Lightning. That's basically it. No subscriptions, no accounts. When you come to the website, all of the data is stored client side. That's good for privacy. Credit card connection, anything like that. So that's the whole idea behind the website.
Right. So like we talked about before with like Sats for AI, it's like and it still is all open source models, open source everything. Whereas this is more what I thought was going to be a bigger commercial opportunity, which was I started using ChatGPT personally like last year, early last year. And at first it was fun. I was like making it give me like imaginary Joe Rogan and Norm MacDonald conversations and things like that. And it kind of evolved from there. And I had a subscription for a while and I used it a lot for work. I'm a software engineer by trade. So it was like, it kind of replaced Stack Overflow. And then it kind of progressed from there where you could like, it would give you like boilerplate code or it would almost basically complete like a simple API, REST API or something like that for you. And you could do so much more than that. But just the general ChatGPT chat interface, I stopped using that so much. It kind of loses its utility for if you're just kind of asking it questions and you're not like really integrating into your work. So I didn't need a subscription anymore and I didn't want one, but I do still use it occasionally. And like, I don't want an account. I don't want Google or OpenAI to have all this in like this whole dossier of my inner thoughts and how I solve questions or solve problems and how I think about things. And I was like, this is a great thing for Lightning. And this is why I think like this one, where you get that access to the different models, Stable Diffusion, Claude, ChatGPT, or GPT-4. And it just kind of is that layer where you could just pay for it, like you said, per question with Lightning. So I guess my question is, how popular is this? Like, have you, what is your user base growing? Like, are you getting traction with this?
We are getting, I'll be real. Like we, last week we had, I think almost 1500, queries total. That's still not a ton. We're getting, like this week, we're getting around 40 users a day. But you know, I have this little trend line that I've built. You know, when this thing started in early March, I said, wow, if I could grow it, you know, just 10, 12, 15% a week, it'll be 18 months and I'll be in really good shape. Mm-hmm. So you just got to go one step at a time. Up until now, we've been growing at 12% a week. We used to be at 15% a week. That's a little much, but, you know, 12% is pretty good. You know, I looked, Paul Graham has some paper he wrote, in the early 2000s, and he said, you know, your startup is in good shape if you're growing at 5 to 7% a week. So if I can maintain 12 or even possibly, you know, 10, that's still pretty good. And it won't be that long before I'm actually paying the bills.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's so early, like AI is so early. It's really, it's progressing pretty quickly, but people are just been starting to use it in the past year. Same with Lightning. Lightning has been around for a few more years than that, but it building that infrastructure and that foundation and the apps on top of it, it takes time. And people are still trying to figure out like where AI fits with Bitcoin. Like there's this relationship with energy. There's this relationship with, you know, Bitcoin mining and AI data centers. And there's this relationship between energy and information. And it's just kind of this, it just seems like this natural flow of like sats for AI or pay per Q, this type of model. And it's just so super early. Like what, do you have just like ideas for what you want to do with this or where you think this could go? Because I think like, you know, paying for a prompt is where it starts. That's how you start getting people into this and you start building these funnels. But it's like, you can get to this point where, you know, whatever you're doing in your IDE when you're coding, and it's like, you could have it set up so that like with a prompt or like a click, it's like, boom, you're not even coming back to this browser. You're just using, you know, some sort of like autopilot or copilot, excuse me. But you just load up a Lightning wallet or a Bitcoin wallet and you can just pay for it as you go. It's just, I don't know. It's like markets for sats and information.
So the primary like synergy that I see with Lightning and AI, you know, that those are two, crypto and AI, those are two buzzwords that, you know, people seem to be raising a lot of money with frequently, lately. But the thing that I like about Lightning in particular, with AI is it's the instant settlement nature and it's the super small like micropayment possibility. And I think that allows us, and it's not just for AI services. I think AI is probably one of the very best use cases for these instant settlement, super small payments. But the instant settlement nature of the fact that you cannot have chargebacks on Lightning, I think that really changes the game in payments. And when you look at like how we got to this world where you need a subscription for everything, I think, you know, I cannot articulate it perfectly yet. And to be honest, I need to do more homework on this. But my theory is that we got here because Visa, MasterCard, and all other fiat payments, they all have chargeback risk. And so that chargeback risk is kind of built into their cost model. They have to deal, the merchants have to deal with chargebacks. The Visa MasterCard also has to deal with that stuff. So then you have these layers of costs that are built into the incumbent payment model. And it makes it such that these payment networks, they kind of need substantively sized payments, like over $10. If it's under $10, then it's not worth it. They have high fixed fees for small transactions. I've looked into this a bit when I was researching this stuff for a Bit Refill, bringing on a credit card or a debit card, whatever. I think there's a really interesting use case there where Lightning uniquely can do very small payments and there's no chargeback risk. And so that model makes it so that, these things are possible in a way that they haven't been before. In terms of your question about like, where is this thing going? We are bringing an API soon where you can come to us, load some credits onto an API key, and then you can take that API key and you can plug it into any number of third-party apps. For example, like Cursor.ai, if you're familiar with that, it's an IDE clone of VS Code, where it's just like Copilot. You can plug an API key into that and, ask questions to your code base. Currently, like on PBQ, and this is how I code, is I just paste in like all of my code, very painstakingly paste my code in and ask questions to it. But we're going to have an API key. I think that's going to be a big hit. The other thing that we are interested in is media generation. I think that stuff is only beginning to get cool. Things like text-to-image models, image-to-image models, image-to-3D, image-to-video, all sorts of, face swapping. There's a lot of really fun, memeable stuff that is coming up with this, song generation, yada, yada, yada. And that stuff, I think, has... It's great marketing for us because it pulls people in who, they've tried the text AI generation and, but if I'm offering some cool media thing and, again, it goes back to my statement before about the advantage of these small payments is if you want to make some cool media generation model that every single website on earth that's doing this stuff right now, they're doing it with the same flow where you go to their website, you have to create an account, you're in some sort of trial phase for 7 days, and then eventually they try to rope you into a subscription to do just whatever media stuff that they're building. Most people don't want to do that. And that kind of hurts these companies because then they start having to tailor it to more like commercial business B2B usage and stuff like that. But the most of the world just want to like play around with this stuff in bits and pieces. And so that's where the small payments come in great, because they can come to my website, they can try a little bit of this, a little bit of that, have fun with it. And they only lost like 25 cents at the end of the day, trying out 6-7 different models. So
I just want to say you make a lot of interesting points there that bring up some thoughts for me. I mean, I'm wondering if the future and, for this stuff is like, I'm literally, I'm a movie maker, I'm a filmmaker. And so I write a lot of scripts and I'm wondering if there's like it's going to be where I'm writing the script and I'm seeing the update of exactly what I'm designing it, in my head at the time. Just for artists, we all start to think like, oh, it's so scary, this AI tool, but what you're really opening up is the ability to create something instantaneously. Now, if you're locking that out with all these accounts that you're saying, what's interesting about PPQ or Sats for AI or any of these kinds of like paper AI models is that it's open source. So you're not necessarily, I'm assuming the artist might get something that they don't want on the Mid Journeys or, these kinds of models. I don't know if that's, it, but the Sats for AI or the PPQ, you guys might get something that's far more clear to the vision of the artist. I don't know. That's just something I'm thinking about.
Maybe. So, I mean, firstly, we offer both closed and open source models. So we have OpenAI models. We have Sonnet, Anthropic models, but we also have MetaLlama, open source, Mixtral, et cetera. But it is, I think at least at this stage, it's more true that the more premium, the better quality models are the closed sourced ones. I think that the censorship with those, it kind of going to your point about like, it's not going to imagine the thing that you want to imagine because it goes against whatever terms it has. I think in most cases, that's not going to happen with these premium models, unless you're really, you know, unless that's, you know, your whole thing is talking, doing controversial or, you know, things. So I think the deal is, the advantage here is that you're pulling in as many models as you can, both closed and open source. For now, the better ones tend to be the closed source ones. But they're at your fingertips quickly, easily, without subscriptions or accounts, et cetera. And your identity is not tied to them in the same way that, right, that it is when you connect your credit,
right,
card.
To go back to what Mike said and to try to kind of maybe add more context to it, because I think he's on to something here a little bit, is that the more you use, especially the chat prompts and honestly, all of these different ones, even the media generators, is you start to learn that it really matters how you ask or what you're prompting with. And you start to get a lot better at prompting because you're getting that feedback from the AI's responses, and you start to learn more about the problem you're trying to solve. And it's almost like in software engineering, it's called the rubber duck problem, where it's like, if you've been trying to solve a problem all day, and then another engineer comes over and you speak to them and you tell them about it, like you're saying it out loud, you're explaining the problem out loud, and in the process of doing that, boom, a light goes off in your head because you're learning how to, like, you're talking through it. But as you're doing this with AI, or you're creating even media, video, or visuals, whatever, and it immediately kind of generates a very rough picture or image of what you've prompted, and you start to tweak the prompt. And as you're tweaking this and you're creating and you're seeing this feedback, you get better at visualizing your vision becomes more clear, and you start to actually be able to go down that path to create the art or whatever that you're trying to create. But also tying that feedback back to cost, and doing it like on a per cost basis, it's you're seeing your efforts, the cost of your efforts, the cost of your time, and you're also getting that feedback, and you're kind of learning after a while, is this a stupid thing? Am I wasting my time, or am I onto something? And I'm going to keep pursuing it. I'm going to keep paying for it. And I just feel like it's just really helping kind of
weed out the bad ideas here.
It's giving that signal of like, is what I'm doing right now worth my time and money? And you get that feedback so quickly. But to go back to something you said towards the beginning, in your previous experience, you talked to a lot of people from third world countries or developing nations, whatever you want, wherever they were, and trying to help them solve their problems. And then you talked about one of the reasons that, you know, Visa, MasterCard, they want to have these bigger payments, not micro payments. Well, one of the reasons that these banks and these payment services don't service the developing world is because of the costs around, these people don't have that much money. Every payment they make is kind of a micro payment to Visa, right? Or they've got to deal with corruption. So it's like, there's so many people around the world that don't have access to these payment networks. And therefore, a lot of them are missing out on some of these AI models. Like they don't have the ability to get the subscription. They don't have a bank account. They can't pay the monthly payment, but they can get Bitcoin, and they can go to PPQ, and they can still have access to these, like the newest models as they're coming out, and they can do it through a platform like this.
That is one of the core pillars of the idea, is opening up access to people who don't have the credit cards to set up the subscriptions. That is a huge thing. One of the primary reasons. There are other reasons aside from sheer cost that Visa, MasterCard cuts off these people. The Visa, MasterCard have to deal with official exchange rates in these countries, and the official exchange rates are often not actually the free market exchange rate. So it costs people extra money to use their dollar denominated Visa, MasterCard. There are terrorism financing. Like, most of Africa is cut off from these networks just because of the peripheral risk that a bank in the U.S. could get caught funding terrorism. So the penalty for getting caught doing that is basically causing these big companies to cut off entire nations from access to these payment networks in many cases. So yeah, there's crypto, Bitcoin, they do solve some really awesome problems that are out there. I will say though that, you know, the users I do have, let's say on any given day, I have probably users from over 20 countries, I would say. They're still heavily Western leaning. And I do have, you know, it's not to say that I don't have developing country users, but the Lightning Network is still quite Western. It's not user friendly. You need to allocate capital to even use it in most cases, at least in a sovereign way, right? This is going to be a very long, long road to get to a place where we can actually offer, fulfill that dream that you just talked about. So
we talk about your users, how much engagement do you have with them? Like, are you talking to them and kind of getting their feedback and using that to kind of decide the direction?
I mean, yeah, totally. I mean, there are a huge, huge guiding hand. So we have this little chat bot on the bottom right of the screen. You can click on it. The messages go directly to me. And then you can also go to Telegram and chit chat. It's huge because we don't have accounts really, it's hard for me to reach out to my customers. I actually, that is a huge downside to not having their email address, both in terms of communicating with the customer and getting feedback, but also like from a marketing standpoint, like it's hard for me to update users on like the latest and greatest new features that I have because they have to come to my website to see it. I can't like send them a monthly email that says like, oh, we just added X, Y, and Z models. That chat bot I would probably be dead without it because they're pointing out bugs that I don't see. I'm using a certain device, I'm using a certain wallet, etc. But all my users are using different browsers, different devices, different wallets, and there's so many bugs that come up that I had no idea even existed. So yeah.
Well, you can kind of see the benefit of a Noster integration there.
Right? I was just about to say that.
Yeah, I guess.
Where it's like if you drop your, instead of a like an email address or a you drop your NPUB here and you'll go on the list and we'll send you all DMs.
That is a great idea. I've been thinking about different ways to integrate Noster. The thing I don't want to do is I don't want to have a non-Noster user hit my website and then I hit them with a login with Noster prompt and then they can't get past it, you know? So I want to do it carefully, but yes, in some sort of optional way, even with the email, I could say, if you want, drop your NPUB or drop your email and I'll put you on the mailing list. So that way I can, you know, tell you about the new updates. One idea I did have that does heavily involve Noster, I'll explain here. Let's see how well I can articulate it. But with the advanced media generation stuff, like all the cool stuff that people are going to increasingly be able to do, what I was thinking is, and it's going to take some engineering, and but when people, users come to my website, they spend a few sats, they make a few images, I can have that optionally. I can create a pair of Noster keys for them on the client side automatically. I can then, given their permission, publish all of their images to a relay. whether it's one that I own or one that I have some sort of agreement with, where they're going to accept, because a lot of these images are going to be like super spammy, right? Like, I would say 95% of the people who are creating images on my website, they're not into Nostr. They never heard of Nostr, but this could be like a Nostr pilling thing where they come, they make some images, and then their images are published on Nostr and
can be zapped.
Then get this. Yeah. You give them an eCash address. And then all of a sudden, like, the image that they created last week has gotten a few tips because it was like a particularly good one. And then they're like, whoa, what's this Nostr thing that I'm getting tips on? Let me check this out a little more. And then the other component to this would be, I'd have this like community shared website where you go to this website and basically the top image generations, the top media generations of the week, they're all, you know, front and center on this website, but all of them are simply just like a list of Nostr notes. So with each image, you can see like how many zaps they got, how many comments they got, likes, etc. That's an idea that I've been thinking about. What do you guys think?
It's like a rubber duck moment. That's what I thought.
Yeah. No, I think that's an awesome idea. I think there's a lot more with what you just said, like what you could do, like for people who are already Nostr pilled, like where they could publish it differently. But then there's, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you talked about, and I've heard this, there's a lot more people making music with AI, and you could also have, you know, like an RSS feed that's associated to, you know, your company or pay-per-Q, and you could publish it on set. So basically is going to be available on Fountain, and then anybody who boosts, you could automatically set up the payment splits so that like that goes to an eCash wallet or a Lightning wallet that they set up. So any music that they create could go into an RSS feed and immediately be paid for or be boosted on Fountain. You could automatically post up to Stacker News, which is kind of like Reddit, except for the upvotes or Lightning. And you can, in there, you can also create payment splits so that like they get some of the payments if that goes viral on Stacker News. Like there's a lot of really good, I mean, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of engineering, but they're fun ideas.
Yeah. And the other cool thing that this involves is, so you have AdSlice, if you guys have ever heard of that company, you have ZBD and you have Thunder. So those are three platforms that draw in kind of a lot of non-Bitcoin plebs, and they're earning small amounts of sats, playing games, filling out surveys, watching ads, etc. They might earn 50 sats or something like that. They don't really have a place to spend them, but you know, draw those users in. They can start making cool media generation stuff. I could even theoretically see like some of those types of people, they get really into the media generation where now they become some sort of, I don't know, graphic artist or AI content creator type, and they could turn it into some sort of job where they get picked up by like a Swan, for example, and now they're doing like content marketing for Swan because of all the cool things that they make.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, almost, yeah, like a, you know, almost, you could create like a decentralized ad network.
Well, not these days. Not, I would say, you know, not these days. Oh, yeah. That's not gonna happen.
Yeah. Oh, at Swan. Yeah.
Yeah. Swan.
Yeah. You could also do like, you could also have like a Substack where it's like people come here and generate like short stories, funny stories, satire, and then boom, that publishes to the Substack, and then they can get noticed there. There's like so many cool ideas. So I don't know if I said this already, but the user experience, the UI of pay-per-Q is great. I mean, I haven't used it like so extensively that I've run into some crazy bug yet, other than maybe like something didn't work how I expected on the prompt. But so aside from bugs, like what kind of features or things are people asking for? Like they coming to you with these ideas, like maybe not this advanced, but you know, just...
The API is a frequent request. I feel like there are some things that the users can detect are a little off if they use it enough. For example,
Handling of context is really complicated, but also very important. The way we're doing it right now is we let the user set their, so they have a default mm-hmm. context window of 1,000 tokens.
That, which I think is cool.
Yeah, that means that the conversation will look back about a page and a half worth of text, and it will use that to answer the next question. You can change that if you want, but it gets crazy expensive if you're like at 32,000 context window. But what the premium chatbots are starting to do now, like OpenAI's ChatGPT and Anthropic and stuff, they're starting to handle context in much cleverer ways where it's still doing a great job, but it's not costing you an arm and a leg. So that type of thing, I think is also going to be important for us to implement, just so we can kind of keep up with that user experience that's improving over on the kind of more name brand models. There's a lot of small things too that can be done to improve the experience. One of the cool ideas that I think not a lot of people realize is possible is, and I tried to do this when I first built it, is literally doing one Lightning payment per query, where it's actually pulling like 10 sats from your Albi wallet every single time you hit the enter button. That I've found to be very hard at the very beginning for several reasons, but I'm kind of flirting with the idea of trying it again. And that's I don't know, that's just kind of a cool idea. I don't know if it's actually super fruitful though, because it's pretty easy to just deposit a dollar and draw down from that and then deposit another dollar. So it has the cool factor. It has the sounds cool factor, but yeah. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to put a Bitcoin on there. Unless I was like this gets to like enterprise scale. Right. But, I'll put $10. Like I'm fine with custodial $10. Right. But yeah, you could also do like, you could always integrate eCash too. You've already talked about that, like some Fedimint type thing where you get credits. You know what I mean? You can buy credits that instead of sats specifically.
What are those strategies that they're doing to make them more clever as to understand the context?
Yeah, so there's several different kinds. Yeah, so they have what's called RAG. It's called Retrieval Augmented Generation. It's where essentially they put all of your previous context into what's called a vector database. And then when you ask your next question, it looks at the words that you use in your next question and it finds matches in that vector database. And so it only pulls chunks of the previous context forward as opposed to the entire body of text. That's one method. Another method is ChatGPT has this like memory thing where as you use it over a period of days, weeks, and months, it starts to remember things about you. It remembers, oh, this guy asks a lot of Bitcoin questions. This guy lives in New York. This guy is X years old. And so it uses that type of context to better answer your questions. This guy is a junior developer versus a senior developer. So if he's a junior developer, we'll add way more comments to his code versus senior developer, it'll mainly be like, architecture stuff. There are other ways there are sneaky ways that I think they're doing it that I can tell it's improved a lot. I just don't exactly know how they've done it. The Anthropic released this thing called caching where I think it's kind of a vector database thing, but with a slight twist on it. And then I've just noticed ChatGPT tends to remember my code files a lot better than it used to. It used to, for like, if I pasted in one file and then I got five questions down and then I ask about that file again, it's like, what file are you talking about? And I'd have to paste it in again. But now it seems to be like it knows the file that I pasted in 20 questions ago, and it kind of caches it in a way. That type of stuff is really, it's kind of a thing that you only notice if you're a power user, but I think it's really helpful. Yeah.
I want to pivot, unless you got something else on this subject, Dan. I kind of want to pivot just a little bit to, you said you got into Bitcoin 2013. I'm curious, as you know, you're a data scientist or you're a Chinese linguist, you know, how that sort of happened, and then how you made it into AI.
I mean, yeah, the Chinese linguist thing, they also teach you a lot of tech stuff. That's like the other side of your job. I worked in, signals intelligence is what it was called. So I started learning a lot of tech stuff. When I came across Bitcoin in 2013, that was when it spiked up to 1,000 for the very first time. And so I read about it just randomly in the news and kind of just got interested in it from there. For all of the, I could tell that it was something new and unique. I by the time that my Navy contract was ending, I was like just so obsessed with Bitcoin that I was, I literally moved into data science because I was obsessed with peer-to-peer markets and like how they work. And I saw that local Bitcoins and Paxful had public APIs that I could plug into. So I was like, man, I have to learn how do I plug into these API things and get this data and aggregate it and make charts with it and stuff like that. So all of my projects, when I went to this data science bootcamp, all my projects were centered around these peer-to-peer trading markets and expanding my knowledge in that area and, you know, explaining that stuff. And so that's kind of how it has all evolved. I think Bitcoin is this, it's a very unique thing that's happening to the world right now. And frankly, I think crypto is also a very big thing that's happening to this world. Aside from Bitcoin, stable coins are hugely useful to many people. And I do think that these quasi L2s that are being built out, they do have a lot of inferiorities to them, but they are also providing a lot of utility usage to people around the world. And the fact that they're not so Lightning is a very, very austere technical engineering undertaking. And it's designed for like the nuclear winter of financial oppression. But we're not in the nuclear winter of financial oppression right now. And so a lot of these other, you know, networks that are being built out, the polygons, the Arbitrums, that type of stuff, they're still providing some very interesting utility around the world. And they're not built in such a austere way that it's hard to get onto those networks. That's the thing with Lightning. It's hard to get on Lightning. It's in a sovereign way.
Yeah.
I do have another question about your background as a data scientist. So I started, you know, I've done this podcast, you know, for what, we've done it to like 2 years or something. And I have, you know, these images or visions all the time. And I'm starting to think like data is this, like, I don't know, if you think about resources or like natural resources, you know, like water or, you know, lumber, oil. You know, data starts to become that kind of, has those kinds of properties. And as a data scientist, I'm sort of curious, like, you're probably coming into swaths of data. Like, if you have any insight on, like, maybe why, you know, this is so important or, what you feel about it.
I mean, I think data scientist is a fancy term that data scientists invented to sound scientific.
Okay.
I don't have the PhD in data science like a lot of the other folks do. I went to a couple of 3-month boot camps, and I do believe I have a very analytical brain. But I'm not I understand the concepts behind neural networks and a lot of machine learning stuff, but that stuff is still very, you have to be really, really good to comment I don't think I could answer your question in a great way. I think that there's people who are much smarter than me, who might be able to take a crack at it. But for me, I just like using data to tell stories and to illustrate how things are working. And frankly, I think there's so much data out there that you can just manipulate in a basic way, and you can tell, you can explain a phenomenon that's happening. And there's so many of those stories. Yeah, you can find basic trends that that are actually going very hidden on the scene. So I don't mind being just the guy finding basic trends, because I think there's a lot of power in that stuff. So
to answer your question a little bit, Mike, is that there's no supply cap. There's no 21 million supply cap on data. It's not scarce. There's just never ending deluge of data coming in out all the time, right? And to find the signal, to find the value, to be able to use all, to be able to take all of that data in and to use it productively. And it's very obvious right now, like AI, it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of focus, thought. There's just so much bullshit to find the signal and to find what matters and to capitalize on that. It just takes a lot of work. So I think that things like Bitcoin and stuff like this, where are you spending your time, your money, whatever, that is, you kind of have to use that, because there's so much psyops, there's so much bullshit out there that it's just not scarce, and you have to kind of narrow it down. You have to be good at finding signal and noise, right? Did you have any other questions, Mike, before I jump to a different topic?
No, go for it. I mean, I have all sorts of weird questions over here. Dan, go for it. Go for it.
I want to know a little bit more about the nature of your company. So you talked about the growth. It's kind of a part-time deal. Is it you? Is it a couple other people? Like, what is the status right now?
I would consider it a full-time thing.
Okay.
My heart is fully behind this. I'm keeping my ties to Bitrefill in case things go badly with my current endeavor. They're rooting me on for sure. I also, there's a lot of value in working for a company with a lot of smart people. I can talk to them for free.
Yeah.
And that type of thing. So get good mentorship, et cetera. I have a partner, and he is basically, doing the heavy lifting on a lot of the coding. His name is, Shimei Prince. He is, I think, 24 years old. And, I met him, I read one of his articles. He's been building AI chatbots for a few years now, for a big German media company called Axel Springer. He was looking to, I think he was getting a little bored with what he was doing there. And he wanted to, build something kind of from the ground up. And I think startups and stuff fascinate him. So I've actually never met him. He lives in Rwanda. But he's, we talk, at least three or four times a day, I think we're complementing each other really well. He's really good at coding. He's very enthusiastic about the product. He gets bossy when I'm taking technical shortcuts and things like that, which is exactly what you want to see.
Yeah.
So
hell yeah.
Yeah.
Are you guys? Is this a bootstrap project or?
Yeah, it's coming out of my wallet right now, if that's what you mean by that.
Yeah.
So totally, that's what's happening. I have
are you talking to investors, or is that something that you're interested in?
It is. I've talked to one VC, reached out to me, and I put together a pitch for them. Actually took a lot of time to put that stupid pitch together. It didn't work out yet. They said maybe we'll talk to you down the road. But I'm not, I guess my little lesson learned there is I think we're doing fine right now. And, I'm not going to spend a ridiculous amount of time trying to chase down money. I'm going to build the best product that I can. And, I'm going to make them come to me.
So that's the idea. So,
you know, now that you're sort of involved in this this AI game, you know, you probably have insight as to where. Do you have any insight of like where you think it's going to go in the future, or like what we, what you think we'll see in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's really it's mind-boggling what all the directions that it can go. I see it even if it didn't improve much from here, there's still so many unbuilt tools that we can make with what we currently have. You know, there's so much power in these LLMs that like we just haven't wired them to proper like niche applications yet. And so yeah, there's just, it's also scary because you see that as powerful as the current thing is, that it's like exponentially improving. Some people say it's not exponentially improving. I guess the industry is kind of agreed that we've plateaued for now. The models are not, we've been waiting on GPT-5 for some time now, and it still looks like it's a little far away. I definitely think it's going to be extremely transformative. I would, if I had to make a bet, I think even more than Bitcoin, it's going to change our lives a lot.
Yeah.
Sure. Hopefully for the better.
I do have like kind of a engineering-y question, I guess, but you basically rely on hooking up to these APIs for these different models. And these companies are growing really quick. The whole space is changing and growing quickly. How much, like once you're hooked up to GPT-4, how much time and effort do you guys have to spend on maintenance or updating or switching to another model? Like do these like OpenAI and Google and whomever, do they have pretty stable APIs that you're working with, and obviously they have APIs, so they do want people to use them, but have they expressed any, I don't know, dislike of maybe what you're doing, like this paper queue thing where they might censor you from using it or something like that in the future?
Yeah. This is definitely a question I had. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Firstly, it is very easy to switch API providers, et cetera. You know, we can do that in 5 minutes in most cases.
Okay.
But you know, when it comes to the building out the enhanced features like the, RAG models and the media generation stuff, then you have to build out the UI for that. That's the part that takes a lot
right.
of time.
Yeah.
In terms of like getting cut off and stuff, I mean, we're so small right now that like we're not even
on their radar.
We're a couple of years away from even being on their radar. In the best case scenario, like if we grew as much as we want. Even so, before I even started this, I spent quite a bit of time reading through the terms of service of these things because I knew that that was a threat. I didn't want to spend a year or two building something and then just have it all taken away. I read through the terms of service. I consulted, a lawyer or two in a non-official capacity. Like I just kind of have some lawyer friends and I said, you know, here are some parts of the terms of service that I'm a little worried about. What do you think? And for the most part, I think I'm in the clear. There's one part of the OpenAI terms of service that mentions like, in general, we like that, you know, the consumers of the API, like your users should have accounts. And my users don't have accounts, but they do have credit IDs. And so worst case scenario, like in OpenAI wants to do that to like, I think they want to do it for quote unquote safety reasons. Like if some child pedo is using my bot, consistently, they want to like narrow it down to that account. Right.
Yeah.
So I believe I can, and I have this all on my website, like full disclaimer, we are under the thumb of OpenAI. At the end of the day, we are for their access to their model. It is a permissioned model. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to do my best to play by their rules, but just enough to play by their rules. I don't want to give them anything more, but I do think that, yes, I can. Another thing that I have to abide by and that I am abiding by is I have to block certain set of countries, which frankly, as a libertarian, and you know, that really sucks because I'm blocking hundreds of millions of people from bettering their lives because our government hates like their government. You know, if you're born in a certain country, that means that I have to like prevent you from bettering your life. That is a huge violation of human rights. It pisses me off, but I have to do it, and I am doing it. But you know, that's just what it is. So,
is there a way to get access to the robust data model of, you know, OpenAI without going through an OpenAI? I mean, is it really like the Amazon? It's basically like the Amazon or AWS of AI,
You can go to third-party providers and get access to OpenAI, but it's a game of cat and mouse. And if my butt is in the United States and I was of big enough importance, they would find a way to apply pressure to me. So yeah, at the end of the day, you know, you can play those games. You can go get API. You can get OpenAI API access from some third-party source, and then you can even get it from a fourth party source that's getting it from a third party source, that, you know, you can do all that stuff, but still you have a centralized website. Your name is on the masthead of the company, and so they can go
after mm-hmm.
And so there's no one that carries that kind of amount of model, right? Or that robustness of model, I guess, other than OpenAI.
Well, you got Claude.
I mean, I understand it is like, you know, this, they're ingesting all this information. They save it all. They store it all. They use it for, you know, the algorithms and things. And then they spit it back to you. So everyone who has to attach to it doesn't have that raw data. They're basically using, am I seeing this correctly, or am I just totally?
They're using a lot of energy to create these compressed models. They take all this information and they run it through an algorithm with all these GPUs, and they compress it into this model. And this model is what you're interacting with. You're not interacting with really like cloud data centers full of, it's not like going through a, you know, like with like BigQuery and like looking for a Quora search.
So I definitely don't understand
that answers your question. Like it's match. Yeah. It's over my head, but it's not as simple as what you're saying either.
Got it.
Yeah. Having said that, though, the models that they do build, they can only be built with a huge amount of capital allocation. And so what's ended up happening is that you do have 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 6 companies tops that really have the premium models out there. And Meta has this open source-ish model that is supposedly going toe-to-toe with these Anthropic and OpenAI models. I don't think it's quite there, but I haven't tested it super extensively. I do think there is hope for, more of a democratization of these really good models. And hopefully that does happen. Yeah,
for sure. Thanks. Thanks for coming on and talking more about this. I definitely want to keep in touch. I wrote down like 20 ideas, so I'll DM you those ideas, and we can talk about it more if you want. But before we go, since you can't get email updates quite yet, and this stuff will be in the show notes, but where do you want to send people to learn more? I mean, obviously to use the site, but to keep up with updates and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I guess the main place we release announcements and stuff is our Twitter handle. So it's ppq.ai, ppq.ai on Twitter. But other than that, just go to the website, ppq.ai, and communicate with me. Use that chat widget that I talked about. And during all my waking hours, I'm usually like a 10 minutes away from replying or less. Tell me what you want to see. Give me feedback, opinions, ideas, et cetera, all that stuff.
Your partner, does he do podcasts? Do you want to come on and we could talk to him about chatbots and the technical stuff a little bit?
Yeah, he knows AI very well. I think he could do that type of thing for sure.
Cool. I'll reach out to him because I love this stuff. I love this product and I want to learn more about it and I want to contribute to it somehow. Like I just want to be involved. You start making a lot of money, you got to let me know when you're hiring engineers.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. Cool, man.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and I'll cut it.
Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!